Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with France 24. An interview with Francesca Albanese, UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights Situation in Palestine. She was heavily criticized by Israel, along with the US and France, for describing the Israeli actions in Palestine in a paper entitled Anatomy of a Genocide. She says that the Israeli military has broken humanitarian law by distorting the principle of proportionality and killing tens of thousands of civilians, justifying the deaths by claiming that they were being used as shields. She says that genocide in Palestine preceded the existence of Hamas by decades and did not begin after October 7th. She says the war has created an unprecedented crisis in international relations and law. Then a brief report on an Israeli bombing attack on Tuesday on another UN school housing displaced Palestinians, killing dozens of people, mostly civilians. France 24.
Hello and welcome to Tête-à-Tête, France 24's flagship interview show. Our guest today is Francesca Albanese. She is the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the human rights situation in the Palestinian territories, and she joins us from southern Italy. Thank you very much for being with us. In late March, you presented a report entitled Anatomy of a Genocide to the UN Human Rights Council, in which you declared that there are clear indications that Israel has violated 3 of the 5 acts listed under the United Nations Genocide Convention for its war on Gaza. 3 months later, would you give a similar assessment?
Yes, I would, absolutely. In fact, I think that what has happened since I presented my report is a confirmation that my analysis was correct, because I have not only documented facts that were committed and that amount to genocidal acts with the required intent to destroy the people in Gaza in whole or in part, but I also shed light on a very critical point that Israel, throughout this latest assault on Gaza, has never denied the acts committed. It has simply justified them. It has justified them as in compliance with international law. But by doing so, it has completely capsized and distorted critical tenets, basic tenets of international humanitarian law, like the principle of distinctions between civilians and combatants. Everyone has been considered a potential target or Hamas affiliate. It has completely distorted the principle of proportionality, according to which each action which is deemed necessary because of military targets is to be proportionate so as not to cause extreme damage to the civilian population, and also the principle of precautions, according to which civilians must be protected to the largest extent possible. Israel has declared safe zones through and through, including recent examples like the killing of over 90 people in Al-Mawasi refugee camp, which was declared a safe zone. And there are dozens of examples like these, where Palestinians are bombed and are killed and are maimed in areas that are declared protected areas, so areas of no hostility. Or still, Israel has justified the killing of and the full destruction of hospitals, according to the argument that they were used for military purposes without real evidence, or the fact that everyone was considered a human shield, like extending ad infinitum this category. This is what Israel has been doing.
Right, but does it amount to genocide? You know, this is the mother of all crimes. I mean, you described the situation in Gaza. If there is a genocide, it's against the Palestinian people, and we're not seeing the same thing, although there is obviously a lot of violence in the West Bank.
Well, first of all, I think that as the Lemkin Institute has pointed out already a couple of months ago, the risk of genocidal violence expanding to the West Bank and East Jerusalem is there. And it's in plain view, and it seems that people, especially in government officials, prefer to be in denial instead of acting, because genocidal statements, genocidal pronouncements have been made against the Palestinians in the West Bank. And also, how do we explain the fact that nearly 600 Palestinians, many of them are children, have been killed in the West Bank in the last 7 months? 9,000 people from the West Bank alone have been arrested and detained, most of them, over 7,200 of them, without charge, without trial, in the West Bank and East Jerusalem alone. And again, there is no Hamas military presence. But going back to the point you were making, Mark, considering genocide like the mother of all crimes or the crimes of crimes, we shouldn't be distracted by the emphasis we put on this crime, in the sense that it's very specific, it's very different from the other crimes, but it's still not the most serious of all. There is no hierarchy among atrocity crimes. War crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide are three international crimes with specific characteristics. What characterizes genocide is the fact that criminal acts are committed with the intent to destroy a people in total or in part. And in fact, I argue that this is one of the most critical cases of genocide, a tragedy foretold, because the intent to eliminate the Palestinian through all means available, being transferring them or neutralizing them or segregating them to a point where the conditions of life to which they were subjected would be calculated to lead to their destruction.
Israel has obviously accused you of bias, so has the US, so have Germany and France, especially because they say that you don't acknowledge what Hamas did on October 7th and that you're giving excuses to what happened that day.
This is so untrue. This is so untrue. And yes, of course, the US and France and Germany were against me, but simply because they are siding with a state which is committing genocide. So while their complicity is evident, and I'm talking of the United States, who's providing weapon, political support, and denying the crimes that Israel is committing, even when they are admitted by the very Israelis. So let them be in a state of denial. But I want to clarify a point of contention with the former government of France. I've never downplayed and I've never denied, I've never justified the crimes that Hamas or other Palestinian armed groups have committed on the 7th of October. Rather the contrary, I accused this military actions as war crimes and possibly crimes against humanity. What I said is that history doesn't start on the 7th of October, and Western governments have conveniently turned a blind eye on the horrible situation that Palestinians have been enduring under Israeli rule. How many October 7 have the Palestinians endured? This is something that France and Germany and the US, together with Israel, prefer not to look at. You see, this is being so partial and so biased that doesn't even necessitate a huge explanation. My role as a special rapporteur, as an independent expert of the United Nations, is to look at the facts in their objectivity. But once it's clear where the asymmetry or the imbalance or the violations are, I have to report on them.
Right.
Either they are committed by Hamas or by by Israel. And there was no Hamas in 1967, in 1973, or during the First Intifada. Israel has always been a brutal regime against the Palestinians, and violence, unfortunately, generates violence. So, of course, Hamas has committed crimes, no question about that. And Palestinians have committed acts of violence against Israelis in the attempt to defend themselves during a decade-long brutal occupation. But the question is, the response to the 7th of October should have been justice, meaning ensuring that the perpetrators who had not been killed already by Israel for the 7th of October attack and violence could be arrested and prosecuted as international law demands. And this applies to both Palestinians and Israelis.
How would you rate the position of the international community on this war? It's quite divided, obviously, but how would you describe it in a few words?
It has created a crisis of unprecedented proportion in the multilateral system, because it's true, the international community is not just divided, is fragmented with opposing political views and interests. I think that what the Atlantic bloc, because eventually it's a part of the Western bloc, is doing is extremely dangerous for the multilateral system, because again, no one asks Israel not to protect itself, its territory and its citizens, but defending Israel as having a legitimate basis to carry out a lethal war against the Palestinians as a whole. This is something that it's putting a nail in the coffin of international law, because of double standards and because of what the extent to which it's proving that international law and multilateralism are ineffective.
Francesca Albanese, I want to thank you very much for appearing here on Friends 24.
Israeli airstrikes continue to fall across central and southern Gaza, including one that struck a school housing displaced Palestinians. Local authorities say that dozens of people were killed and injured across the enclave on Tuesday. Those deaths coming one day after the US State Department said the number of civilian deaths in Gaza remained unacceptable. Israel has said it's targeting Hamas militants hiding among the civilian population. Well, for more, we can cross now to Jerusalem to speak with ABC's correspondent there, Jordana Miller. Jordana, Israel's campaign in Gaza has been intensifying in recent days. What is Israel hoping to achieve with this latest round of strikes?
Well, we've heard from the Israeli Prime Minister that he believes increasing military pressure will help Israel in the ceasefire talks have not broken down despite Israel's assassination attempt over the weekend that killed 90 civilians. Well, we don't know how many were civilians, but at least 90 people. Israel claims that a lot of them were militants guarding these two top high-profile Hamas leaders, but certainly dozens of civilians were killed. And that's what we've been seeing over the last several days. Israel has appear to intensify its attacks against Hamas operatives that are, they claim, holding up in UN facilities like UN schools that have turned into shelters. And they seem to be going after them, even in areas where there are civilians around. Now, the Israeli army says that they take measures. They're using pointed munitions, but the fact remains that after these attacks, there are still dozens of civilians that are killed. And yesterday was an example. We saw it both near Khan Yunis and in Nusrat at a UN facility. It also appears that Israel is making a clear effort to demolish or destroy UN facilities. You know, one can assume that maybe that is so that Hamas will no longer be able to use them. However, those are facilities that were used to educate Gazans and obviously will be part of the massive reconstruction efforts after this war.
Jordana Miller reporting from Jerusalem. There, thank you very much.
That interview and report were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They are also available on most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. The Japanese Prime Minister has personally apologized for the 25,000 forced sterilizations under a so-called eugenic protection law that was in effect from 1948 until 1996. Nuclear regulators told TEPCO, the company that operates the devastated nuclear power plant in Fukushima, that they must do more to prevent safety and security lapses. NHK Japan.
Japan's Prime Minister has personally apologized to people who were forced to undergo sterilization. The surgeries were performed on people with certain disabilities under a now-defunct law. Kishida Fumio on Wednesday met about 130 plaintiffs and officials involved in lawsuits over the sterilizations.
The government's responsibility is extremely grave, and I am deeply sorry. I apologize on behalf of the government.
The meeting comes after the Supreme Court this month ruled the eugenic protection law unconstitutional and ordered compensation. The law took effect in 1948 to combat a post-war surge in births. It was abolished in 1996 amid growing domestic and international criticism. By that point, about 25,000 people had been sterilized.
It was really painful for the whole 67 years since I had the surgery. I thought the ruling would be the halfway point of my life, but I still can't put my mind at ease. What I want to see is for the government to take full responsibility.
I want the Prime Minister to help create a society where no one is discriminated against. Please keep in mind that there are a lot of people out there who have kept to themselves the fact that they were forcibly sterilized.
There are other ongoing lawsuits regarding the surgeries. Kishida says the government will drop its argument that the plaintiffs have lost their right to sue for damages because the statute of limitations has expired. He also says he'll immediately advance discussions about compensation. A nonpartisan group of lawmakers formed early this month to work out the details of a new compensation program. Members say they hope to present legislation for that as soon as possible. Nuclear regulators say Tokyo Electric Power Company must do more to prevent safety and security lapses at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. It comes after a series of recent incidents at the damaged facility, which suffered a triple meltdown due to the earthquake and tsunami in 2011. On Tuesday, Japan's Nuclear Regulation Authority highlighted two incidents which may have violated TEPCO's rules and safety measures. One involved a fire alarm triggered at a waste incineration facility in February. Another had to do with a power outage in April caused by damage to an underground cable. They come on the heels of another incident last October. Two workers had to be hospitalized after being splashed with cleansing liquid containing a radioactive substance. TEPCO conducted a general inspection of the plant from May through June. It found insufficient risk assessment and study of safety measures, as well as a lack of information sharing with contractors, led to the incidents in February and April. Regulators say the utility needs to boost its preventative safety measures because its in-house education reviews and work procedures have been ineffective.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They are heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp, as well as most podcast sites. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, like listeners in Willits, California and New York City did this week, you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. There's also a link for online support available at my website, outfarpress.com. Many thanks to everyone who has ever helped to keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please keep it up. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. A viewpoint on the telecommunication problems in Cuba caused by U.S. sanctions on countries supplying equipment with U.S.-made components. Venezuelan President Maduro faces an election on July 28th. The Iranian President-elect Pezeshkian says he will not respond to U.S. pressure and that his country has no nuclear weapons. Israeli forces continue to kidnap Palestinians, over 9,000 since October. UN experts and human rights groups say that they are routinely beaten and tortured. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Among the sectors seriously affected by the inhumane U.S. blockade is communications, whose economic losses in the last 10 years are estimated at $500 million, with nearly 98% of the damage. It is Atexa, the Cuban telecommunications company, the entity of the system, which also includes the postal service and new technologies, that suffers the greatest damage. The Cuban company cannot acquire telecommunications equipment, then has 10% American components, which makes it impossible to access cutting-edge technology, affecting the modernization process in that sphere. Currently, 85% of the telecommunications network of the Caribbean country has obsolete technology. Washington's hostile policy has even led to several international suppliers deciding to suspend their repair services for technology installed in the national territory. It has been a practice during all these decades to prevent Cuba from connecting to the submarine fiber optic cables that pass near a country, even 30 kilometers away. The economic blockade has prevented Cuban American companies from advancing in the conclusion of mutually beneficial agreements in the telecommunications sector. The unilateral measure limits access to the Internet, the use of information, and the exchange of knowledge, a violation of the right of Cubans to use that service. Cuba has announced the difficulties it has faced in participating in meetings and other virtual events convened by the organizations of the United Nations system due to its restricted access to the platforms used. Despite all these obstacles, the country tirelessly seeks alternatives to improve and extend its services in the area of telecommunications to citizens and institutions from various sectors.
Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, in the context of his national tour ahead of elections on July the 28th, has called for the creation of a large national front aimed at the search for peace, for a better economy, democracy, and against fascism. This call from the Venezuelan president took place in an area of the Bolivarian state of Portuguesa. Nicolas Maduro said on Sunday, "We are the only ones who have a popular project for the transformation of this country. I extend my hand to all Venezuelans, to all Venezuelan women, to all the neighbors, so that we can unite in a great national front against fascism and violence." The Venezuelan president stressed that everyone who wants freedom, peace, and democracy, and that does not agree with fascism, should unite. Along those same lines, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro said no one will take away the right to peace from the people of Venezuela. No one will take away the right to our future of the youth, framing the peace as a key point within the objectives that he will have as the president again, if elected on July the 28th.
Iranian President-elect Masoud Pezeshkian, in his first message to the world from Tehran, recommended on Tuesday that the United States recognize reality and understand that his country does not and will not respond to pressure. The text recalls that Washington unilaterally withdrew from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action and cause untold suffering, death, and pain to the Persian nation, in addition to billions of dollars in economic losses through the imposition of extraterritorial sanctions. He adds that the United States escalated hostilities and engaged in state terrorism by assassinating General Qasem Soleimani, a world anti-terrorist hero known for his success in saving the population from this scourge. He goes on to stress that Iran's defense doctrine does not include nuclear weapons and urges Washington to learn from past miscalculations and to recognize that the policy of pitting the countries of the region against each other has not been successful. The president-elect says that as a priority, his administration will urge its Arab neighbors to work together to achieve a permanent ceasefire in Gaza that will end the carnage and prevent the conflict from widening. Quote, next, we must work to end the occupation that has devastated the lives of four generations of Palestinians. States have a duty to take measures to prevent genocide, not to reward it with the normalization of relations with the perpetrators, unquote. The document states.
Israeli forces have kidnapped scores of Palestinians in attacks on several cities in the occupied Palestinian territories. Rights groups say all of the detainees have been severely beaten and tortured. The Tel Aviv regime's military forces raided the cities of Ramallah, El-Quds, and Jenin, and several other cities, according to the Palestinian Commission for Detainees and Former Detainees Affairs and the Palestinian Prisoners Society in a joint statement on Sunday. The military forces detained at least 30 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank overnight, Saturday into Sunday. And according to the statement, the detainees were subjected to abuse, severe beatings, and threats against their families, in addition to widespread acts of sabotage and destruction of citizens' homes. The latest arrests brought the number of Palestinians kidnapped by the Israeli forces in the West Bank to over 9,000 since early October. In the Gaza Strip, the regime's forces have kidnapped at least 5,000 Palestinians since October the 7th, and the fate of many of them or the conditions of their detention are still unknown. The UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Alice Jill Edwards, said previously that she had received reports that Palestinians were being beaten, kept in cells blindfolded and handcuffed for extensive periods, and deprived of sleep, also threatened with physical and sexual violence. Other reports suggest that detainees have been insulted and exposed to acts of humiliation, such as being photographed and filmed in degrading poses.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcast, however. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to work harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information to make an online donation. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I am recuperating from a spinal injury, I'm staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.